And the country had to absorb it. And so New York went from being like 100% Protestant, suddenly there were more Catholics on the island of Manhattan. And that took a lot of adjustment. There was a lot of anger about all of that. And so America has had to sort of absorb Catholicism in fits and starts, in bits and pieces, and that has been beneficial to the United States of America. However, it's been difficult for them, for the more sort of Protestant sides of them. And you've seen unrest, and you've seen like the burning of convents and that sort of thing. If you've ever watched the gangs of New York, you have a kind of fictional telling of the know-nothings in that story, and how the Catholics, you know, are having to stand their ground as the know-nothings are attacking them, and eventually the cardinal gets out there with a bat, and the Catholic Irish, the fighting Irish, stand behind him and take a stand. And so that kind of animosity towards the church also kind of nuances Catholic patriotism, right? We look at the country as ours and we love it, but we know it has not always been perfect. I think Protestants in general, and a lot of secularists in general, they look with suspicion to Catholics because they'll say that we have a foreign prince, right? That we are not entirely dedicated to the United States of America because we are also Catholic. Ultimately, Catholics are kind of more comfortable, if we're honest, with monarchy. Like, you know, we didn't necessarily try to overthrow the monarchy, right? Most of the time, the Catholics ended up, even when the monarchy hated Catholics, most of the time, the Catholics ended up fighting for monarchs. And, you know, we worship a parish called Mary Our Queen, and then we worship, you know, we have a feast day called Christ Our King, Christ the King. I mean, we have probably the oldest monarchy in the world, in the papacy. So there's a suspicion, right, that many non-Catholic Americans have towards Catholics. And it's something that the Catholic Church has had to overcome and in part help people to understand that we can still be good Americans. And this is not a new issue. It's from the beginning, right? The Lord takes the coin and says, whose head is this? Caesar's. Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. So, you know, already the church is in a kind of, there's the kingdom of God, and it is on the earth, but it's not of the earth, right? And so it overlaps, and it's in many ways it supersedes, because you know the Roman Empire was unquestionably powerful, and we survived it. You know, it disappeared, and we kept going. So, and we've seen a lot of kingdoms come, a lot of kingdoms go, a lot of republics come, and a lot of republics go. So there's a kind of suspicion, if you're a secularist, towards Catholicism. And there's a reluctance upon us as Catholics to get involved in an armed rebellion. I'm just going to read you from the Catechism. This is the Catechism, paragraph 2243. It says, armed resistance to oppression by political authority is not legitimate unless all the following conditions are met. There is certain grave and prolonged violation of fundamental rights. All other means of redress have been exhausted. Such resistance will not provoke worse disorders. There is well-founded hope for success, and it is impossible reasonably to foresee any better solution. Right? That basically means, you know, that's one of the reasons Catholics are reluctant revolutionaries, right? We usually get guillotined in a revolution. We're not the ones behind the guillotine, killing people. because there's a kind of reluctance for us to question authority, even if it's a corrupt authority, even if it's an imperfect authority. Because sedition is a sin for us as Catholics. So you really have to be taken to almost an extreme level to rebel. But that does not mean that rebellion isn't happening in the world. It is. But it just means as Catholics we kind of have a reluctance to do that. And we can think of the war in the Vendée as an example of all of that. So what then is Catholic patriotism? And how might we define it? And I would submit to you that it's more about a people than it is a government. It's not partisan. I would even say it's not political. I think it would be deeply respectful of history. It's not trying to tear down history or rewrite it. And it's about heritage and culture, a piety towards honoring our fathers and our mothers. And it includes the church. And that's the big difference, right? Between, you know, our Catholic understanding of patriotism. So some people will say that this is the greatest written document in the world. I as a Catholic priest have to tell you the Bible is more important, but it's nevertheless a very important document. And it's extremely important in the history of humanity. And you'll hear people talk about a living constitution, and it's not just one side that does this. And on some level, I'm going to be nuanced here. On some level, it's a way to try to get away with doing whatever you want, right? To say a living constitution. Like, we don't really have to pay attention to that constitution that we swore that we would uphold. But on another level, there is something called the living constitution. And by which I mean to say that in the United Kingdom, they use the word constitution, and they have no document to point to. Right? Because constitution is more than just a written document in the English language. It is also our way of life, right? The way we have evolved over the centuries, the laws that we have brought up, the rights that we have respected. So a constitution written is one thing, and it hopefully canonizes those things that we fundamentally see as our constitution. That's what the American Revolution was about. It was like, we want to defend our old way of life, right? Where you had rights. And we see the current reign of George III and the current British Empire as standing on to those rights. So the Constitution, I think, is and can, in a sense, be seen as living and broader, because it's kind of who we are and how we work together, how we work out a society. Fulton J. Sheen, probably the best teaching bishop in our nation's history, and he was a classical liberal. Some people would say he's overly optimistic about human nature. But I would say that he gives us a kind of understanding of patriotism. And he says that patriotism in the United States of America can be looked at in two different ways. And you have to keep in mind, he's sort of in a time where Marxism was very much a threat to the world, Cold War, and so he was really very much an anti-Marxist. And he says that there are different ways of defining the United States of America, and one of them is as revolution. So one of them is that, you know, America is a constant revolution for progressivism, to make a better place. And that sort of sets us up, if we take it to its purest form, to kind of an instability, right? We're constantly moving to the next thing. We're never satisfied. We're always tearing something down. And that's kind of a kind of Marxism. And he would say that the other way of looking at America is, and the American experiment, is that of respecting human rights. And when you respect human rights, then that constitution becomes important, because what rights have we had in the past? You know, what can we do to protect those rights? How can we live with respect for property and freedom and just the basic, the things that are, that, you know, that we think of as like, you know, when the law trespasses against it, it's like, wait a minute, that's not right. Why is that not right? Because we know, because it's part of our collective Judeo-Christian heritage and history on you know, that constitution of the Western mind. And it's interesting to, I don't know if you know who Tom Holland is. There's the actor Tom Holland, and then there's the author Tom Holland. And he's great. He has a podcast called The Rest Is History, and it's excellent. And Tom Holland is kind of an atheist. He flirts with Catholicism, but he sees everything as Christian. And I think he's right there. He says, you know, that everything basically in the modern world, you know, that we sort of see as antithetical to Christianity, it's almost a kind of Christianity in and of itself. And Christianity has so formed our society that we really can't escape it, even when we're trying to. And so he would say, for example, that even communism is a perversion of that, of Christianity, right? The new world, the creating a new society, you know, where men and women are equal, where all things are equal. I mean, all those things come out of the faith, but then they get perverted, right? And in another sense, like, you know, even sort of, you know, the reactions against communism become, you know, even though they're heavy-handed, they're kind of trying to preserve traditions, they're trying to preserve rights. And so we need to think about that and see it for historically for what it is. I know I'm 60 years old, and I've watched my lifetime where everybody in the South was a Democrat, and now virtually everybody in the South is a Republican. And you know, that switch has kind of happened in my own life, right? Where Alabamans never voted for Republicans. Now they vote for Republicans. So you see a kind of evolution where the things that the Democrats used to believe are now things that the Republicans believe, and things that the Republicans used to believe are now things that the Democrats used to believe. And so you watch these things sort of swish back and forth. And I think that's important for us to see as Catholics. There's a great author, if you don't know him, Roger Scruton, Sir Roger Scruton. He writes, and he's an Englishman, he's an Anglican. Should be Catholic. He said he flirted with Catholicism. He married a divorced lady, I think, so he never became Catholic. But he too is somebody that I think we should read as Catholics, sort of get a better understanding of what is conservatism. And it's not something that we necessarily have to buy everything that he says, but I think he gives us a nuanced way of looking at it. Because sometimes conservatism is politically, I don't know, it's just more monetary than it is anything. And so he tries to give us a philosophy behind it, which I think is powerful. Of course, there is the conversation about big government and less big government, right? Smaller government. And that goes back to the beginning. That's Hamilton, big government, right? Hamilton, strong federal government. And you know, when we look at our own American history and we see Washington, where there's just way too much power in Washington and way too much money spent for needless things, we can kind of blame Hamilton for that. But really, Hamilton would not, he'd probably balk at what he sees going on right now in Washington, D.C. His competitor was Thomas Jefferson, who was a slave owner and owned a plantation, and yet he was an advocate for human rights, and he was, it's kind of a bundle of contradictions. And he had a kind of almost romantic notion of the yeoman farmer and the rural person. And he was a strong advocate for states' rights. And you sort of see, again, it's kind of switched now, right? There's Southeast piece. The Republicans used to be like Abraham Lincoln, right? And now the Republicans are more states' rights. Where so you're kind of seeing this evolution in American history. And the person that I think all of us need to read and know a little bit more about is Charles Carroll, who was the Catholic signer of the Declaration of Independence. And he is someone who sees all of this, comments on all of this, worries about all of this, but he signs the Declaration of Independence, and he is a founding father. He's the last to die. And when he died, they called him the last of the Romans to die. And he gives us a really good perspective on these issues that we're having now that we've had from the very beginning, right? From the very beginning. And he is the first citizen. He thought Jefferson was too radical. He thought Madison was too radical too. And again, I think as Catholics, that gives us, again, an interesting perspective. Be able to look at these things and kind of assess them philosophically and understand that they're tugging on our hearts in different directions. And at its root is, what is the American Revolution? And what are we celebrating? And you can say that it's the war of the American Revolution, or you can say that it's the war for American independence. And I think those are two different things, right? And on some level, of course it's a revolution, because they were revolting against the foreign king. But another level, it was an inevitability. I mean, the United States is huge. England is small. The United States is rich. England is poor. I mean, this was an inevitable thing that more people in the United States of America in 1776 could read than in England. So it was kind of a natural thing that the U.S. evolves to become independent. And what ends up in all of that is a partnership, right? The oldest ally of the U.S. in many ways is the first enemy of the U.S. But these revolutions were different. So in France, the revolution was anti-clerical, it was anti-church, it was very much a civil war, it was bloody, it was horrible, it was against people who weren't even fighting. You know, it was a bloodbath. And I think the revolution in the United States of America was took place more on the battlefield and more in the mind, and it was really more about independence and in the inevitability of independence. And moreover, that, you know, the United States, the English settlers, or the great-great-grandsons of the English settlers, wanted to stay in the kind of society that they had always had. And it was changing, and they didn't want that. That's how I read it. So I submit to you that both these ideas are Catholic. Yes, we want to progress. Yes, we want equal rights. Yes, we want, no racism. Yes, we want more for the poor. Yes, I mean, those things are very, very Catholic. At the same time, the things that are conservative are also very, very Catholic. And yes, we want, protection of the family, protection of the unborn, protection of the elderly, religious freedom. We want to be able to teach our own children the way we want them to grow up to be. And so you can sort of see how Tom Holland is saying, that there's a kind of Catholicism hidden behind both of these sort of extremes, if you call them extremes. Archbishop Chaput, he says that zealotry for one's country can be a vice, but right now the vice is indifference. People just aren't indifferent about the United States of America. And it's a problem, because The United States of America is, with all of our ills, with all the problems we've had, you know, it's just the most important country in the world, probably the most important advancement of human rights in the world. It's the country that's sort of done more good in the world. I mean, if you take the U.S. out of the equation, you know, all of these places that are almost always blowing up will just blow up. And so, you know, we need to have a kind of respect for our country and a respect for ourselves, a respect for our own society, our own culture, who we are. Let's see, I'm going to move forward a little bit. I think Catholic perspective is essential here. Because we live in a kind of Protestant milieu or secular milieu, and that view is prevalent, but Catholicism is gaining. It doesn't mean that we still don't lose Catholics along the way, we do. But, you know, the Catholic Church was this big in the United States in 1776, and now we're, I think, a quarter of the country, right? And if we keep growing, you know, who knows, within a few generations, it might be even a Catholic country, but it is promising, right? But we have a responsibility to love the country. We have a responsibility to respect it, to know its history, and to defend it when it can be defended, and to call it, challenge it to conversion when it needs to be converted. It's part of the piety that we own towards God, towards our fathers, respect for our fathers and our mothers. It's part of that command, right, to respect our forefathers and to respect authority. And to respect also the Catholic tradition, that in the Catholic tradition, we have a deep respect for that tradition. And we have a respect for authority. And we put up with a lot of social injustices, and have done from the beginning. You know, the apostles were telling the early church people in Rome, the early church Roman Catholics, to pray for the emperor, even as the emperor was maybe the one dragging them out and crucifying them. So that respect for authority, in hopes that, you know, that we can make the world Catholic. That's not easy. And yet that's kind of what we're called to be and called to do. And to respect also the common good. You know, I can't force everyone to be Catholic, but I can respect and support and defend religious liberty. Even if stupid people come about. We've got a black mass that's happening in 2 weeks' time in Atlanta. It's ridiculous. It's shameful. But, you know, we have to kind of defend religious liberty because it's basically there because of Catholics, right? Because Catholics said, we don't want to be forced into one version of Protestantism or another version of Protestantism. You know, we can be a part of this if you just let us be who we are. And so that is very important. Freedom, in that sense, is very, very important. And it's also a challenge, because we can lose, right? Remember that the church is the oldest institution on the earth except for marriage. That's important, right? And also keep in mind that we have a sacral vision of life, and they don't. Those secular people, they don't. We have an understanding that God permeates everything. And so, you know, that just makes us think about war differently. It's in our DNA, our Catholic DNA. Pius Pope Leo XIII, he wrote an encyclical, Sapienza Christiane, and it's on Christians as citizens. It says one, it should say on, I'm sorry. But he wrote this prior to World War I. And he said that we have to love our country, but also the supernatural church. So it's natural to love our country, and that's important and good, but it also has to go in tandem as Catholics with our love for the church. And that's something that, again, that we've kind of gotten challenged on by Americans who don't like Catholicism, who think the Pope is the Antichrist. Okay, so I believe the Republic needs Catholics. We make excellent citizens. We make up 25% of the military. Most of the top brass is Catholic. We are dedicated to education. We kind of predate public education in the United States of America. They were catching up with us. We build hospitals before anybody else. We have a strong sense of the common good, and we serve, the sisters who built the hospitals would help everybody, no matter what color the skin they were, no matter what religion they were. And that's important. That's something that comes from our Catholic ethos. And it's something that has become American, right? But it wasn't necessarily always the case. We built universities, and a lot of times we had to build universities because we couldn't get Catholics into the universities. United States, U.S. bishops built the Catholic University of America. Why? Because Catholics were not allowed to get into doctorate programs. At Harvard, at Yale, at Princeton. It was just a hard line, no Catholics. So if Catholics were going to have a doctoral program, they had to build a university. And so Americans working on steel, on railroad tracks and steel factories, put money together and build a university. And then, now, Yale and Harvard allows Catholics in. But that's the history of that institution. So America needs Catholics, right? And Catholics, when we have goodwill, can change America for the better. So one of the big movers and shakers in all of this, I'll say America's a continuity. And I think that's really important for us to keep in mind. Not everything good came from the United States of America. A lot of what came from the United States of America that's good came from Catholicism. A lot of the ideas and the ideals and the philosophies that end up in our best thinking are borrowed from, Catholic teaching. And so our society and our culture, maybe we're not all, maybe some of us moved here from another part of the world, just, a generation ago, but we're part of this Western culture, part of this Western society, and this worldwide thing, right? It kind of starts in Europe, but it's everywhere. If you have a Western mindset, if you become a part of Western culture, it is ultimately, something that's everywhere. It may be, so I think that's important for us as Catholics and Americans to see that our patriotism is not just political and it's not just 250 years old, right? Our love for our fathers and mothers is way back. Goes back to including the Bible. So we can't draw hard lines between 1776 and 1775. Part of the sort of the great mover and shaker in all of this was a priest by the name of Father Michael McGivney. And he is the man who started the Knights of Columbus, and he saw all of this, and he wanted to make an institution to make American Catholic men stronger in their love for the Lord and their love for the country. And so there was born the Knights of Columbus. Today as the eve of Columbus Day. And so it's kind of appropriate that we should end talking about him. But he had this idea that, as Catholic men, we could bring a lot to America and we could change America for the better. And so much has happened from that institution. And we owe a lot to him and to his vision and to the men that follow. So how do we respond, I think we foster gratitude instead of being bitter, right? And resentful of the past instead of rebelling against it. We learn to honor our forebears, our forefathers, and our foremothers, and cut them some slack because, you know, just because they didn't live in the 21st century, they may not think like we do, you know, about everything. But they're the reasons why we are who we are. And then in many ways, you know, those ideas that evolved in a better way were similarly part of their society, that which they passed on to us. So we're not a new people in 2024. We're part of a continuity. I think it's important for this generation to become less prideful, more respectful of the past, and to reject the dogmatism of this particular age, the wokeism, if you will, and to seek a kind of contentment in our hearts and a respect for the past, a respect for history, to foster joy, and to engender a spirit of gratitude. And all of that is something that we have a job to do in order to help our people with our American heritage roles. That's what they're doing, right? They're trying to do those exact things. And that, I think that's what our fraternity is doing there, trying to help these young people grow up in this society that's so bitter and not be bitter, and to be respectful and to be appreciative of all that they've received. I would say anti-Catholicism is a bigotry that's not something necessarily in the past. That's just reality. And we've got work to do, even just in our pro-life. I mean, people think that we're being overly political when we're pro-life. That really is about the future of the country. Because the country, you know, a lot of these countries, a lot of Catholic countries they're in a tailspin. They're literally going to disappear because they have like zero birth rate. They have almost no replacement. And so, you know, if we have a positive view of our culture and want a future, we're going to have to respect children, we have to respect families, we have to promote those things. That will make the republic last. But the other thing we need to know and keep in mind, and this again is a teaching that Catholicism brings to the table, is the idea of fallen human nature. And I think it's something that our founding fathers, for the most part, had a good sense of. You know, that's why you have things like the checks and balances, you know, but you can sort of see people today in Washington on both sides thinking, well, like, we don't have to, you know, those things are antiquated. And so it's a kind of power grab. It's like, we flourish better as a country when Washington is locked up, right? When they can barely do anything. And when they get too much power and start sort of taking out this check and balance, that's when we really need to worry, right? And so that government was set up because it had an understanding of the broken nature of human nature, right? The brokenness of human nature. And that it would strive to become all powerful. And it needed checks and balances. And so that, I think, is really important for us to bring. Because there's almost no self-criticism. There's a lot of sort of, you know, in woke culture, where they're very self-righteous. They have no sense of being self-critical. And so we need to bring that to the conversation too. It's like, you know, okay, you may be right about this and that, but, you know, but human nature is still broken. And we need to work, and we need to recognize that. And because everything that you think is good, if you take it too far and go too far with too much power, it will turn bad. That's inevitable, right? Because that's that broken human nature that just sort of, we need that kind of balance. We need that self-reflection. Some things you might want to read. I don't know if you, I'm not going to tell you to read these books, but they're interesting because we're coming up on Thanksgiving. You might want to read Not Stolen It's a fascinating read. I have the end of Woman on my desk. She's a great American lady author. Very, very bright lady. You can also find Carrie Gress. She does interviews on Facebook. You can find her in YouTube and all that sort of thing as well. You might want to look her up. She brings a kind of critical view to feminism, and it's really very helpful. So I think, you know, as Catholics, we need to be critical, self-critical of our own, the things that are being promoted in our society. Look back and reflect on them and see, okay, well, that may be good, but this is also, you know, we need to know that not everything is perfect about us, right? A lot may be broken. How we teach history. You know, people say, like, the Catholic Church is evil because we're colonial. It's like, well, you know, with respect, and I mean with respect, if you go to a place in the Americas that's not founded by Protestants, you're going to find a lot more indigenous people, right? So evidently Catholics were intermarrying. Evidently Catholics were, you know, allowing Catholic culture and indigenous peoples just live together. And so just look at the demographics, right? And be critical of the kind of history that you're being told when you're being told that Catholics were, you know, these great oppressors of, you know, killed their genocide. It's like, well, they're not genocide. I remember reading a quote not too long ago. It was from the King of Spain, and somebody was accusing him of, like, killing all of the, you know, his ancestors of killing all of the Mexican, the native Mexicans, when the conquistadors came to colonize Mexico. And he said, well, wait a minute, you know, those are my ancestors too, right? And there's an integration in Catholicism, right? They literally, he is a descendant of Montezuma. You know, so Mexican culture survives. It just becomes part of Catholic culture. And so I think that's another perspective that we can bring as Catholics. And again, we need to be self-critical. We have made mistakes, but there's also so much good. I mean, all the good things I can say about the United States of America, I can say 100 times fold for the Catholic Church. And how blessed we are to be Americans and Catholics. What a responsibility we have, and we need to get busy. So, as we prepare for the semi-quincentennial, let's just work hard to bring a kind of a respect for and a love for the U.S. Sorry, again, we have Mass. God bless you.